Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. All right, friends. Well, as I always say, it's now or never. See, I wanted to say welcome back. It's now or never. And it'd probably take me about a month to overcome welcome back. But we need to get our politicians, as I kind of told you last episode, that we need to get the politicians to lead on the Constitution. So we need to start telling them, either lead on the Constitution or get out of the way, because we'll do it. We'll find somebody to do it. If you won't do it, we will. Now, as we kind of look forward into today, we're actually going to talk a little bit more about Republicanism, because we talked about the elections and local elections, but it means a lot more than just that, because we need to talk in context to what our Republican form of government and how it should be functioning, not just the elections. The elections is the front end part of it. If we start understanding and grasping, you know, what our representative government is supposed to mean and how it's supposed to work and function, then it all starts making more sense. But let me get into those good old obligatories real quick so we can dive into the content that we really still need to cover. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions of where we've come from and what we need to do to get back there. Anyway, and by the way, there is no quick fix. The Convention of States won't do it. As a matter of fact, the Convention of States is so problematic that we need to actually start looking at getting rid of the Convention of States, because if you understand the power that the parties already possess, they don't need, and they would be stupid to ever allow another convention ever again. This is one of the reasons why Madison, when he spoke out against nullification and specifically stated that if a state is to nullify, you know, something that is within the union or the laws of the federal government that they create for the union, if a state nullifies, then they need to secede from the union. It's kind of like in a marriage. If somebody, you know, goes off and does something, then they say, okay, this is our world now. We're going to be living under this contract, under this term or what have you. Even though it's only a two-party union, it is still a union. And one person, if they nullify that, they actually, what they have to do to really nullify that is get divorced as well. This paradigm really eludes most people. This is why you really need to read Madison's notes on nullification of 1834, because he talks about the importance, how it is paramount that the states, plural, the majority of the states step in and actually force compliance. This completely turns the focus away from, you know, what the federal government is doing and puts it on what they are supposed to do and only that. That takes away the Convention of States argument as well. It is so simple that it's brilliant. It's that simple. Anyway, Fortitude Financial Coaching, you need financial guides, financial help, and discipline to get on top of that, your spending, your debt to income ratio, all of those types of things. If you're in a position where you can't do anything or you're so limited financially that you have to take a loan for everything, then you really need to gain control of yourself financially. And Fortitude Financial Coaching, Gary Smith, he's the man to talk to. Now, don't let me call him Greg Smith, because that's another friend of mine. Anywho, free Constitution classes at constitutioneducation.us. And oh, by the way, that anywho, you've probably heard maybe another person or two used to say that. My mother said it all the time. And so it just became a, you know, if you want to call it a bad trait or what have you, because it's just not acceptable English. Anywho, what does that mean? Anyway, I'm not trying to throw you off, and I'm not trying to be irreverent. It was just something that was indoctrinated, inculcated into my brain housing group by my family, by my mother. Anywho, there I go again, see? And I didn't do that on purpose. Free Constitution classes at constitutioneducation.us. If you're looking to actually help people, you want people to actually start understanding, go through there, find very specific videos or classes that you really like, and forward those to people and go, hey, check this out. TimberNation.com, TimberNation.com. You hear me talk a lot about hardwood, American hardwood furniture. This is the place. If you really want something custom and something that you can, you know, relish and hand down to your children, this is the place. RadioDustCovers.com. This is how you can actually protect that expensive electronics. Do not make the mistake of leaving the dust cover on the electronics while you're operating it. You will destroy your electronics over time from overheating. Most electronics have these vents to allow them to breathe. And so the problem is that when you're not operating, now see, when you're operating, when there's heat being generated by the system, it's actually got this positive flow drawing cool air from the bottom and actually allowing the nature of heat, which rises, to go and escape through these vents. Or it's got heat sinks to the sides. And so those heat sinks help emanate and radiate that heat. There's always a mechanism or a multi-mechanism of cooling electronics. So you, when you're not using them, all of a sudden when they start cooling off, they kind of create the reverse. And when all of a sudden they start cooling off to where they become cold, they start allowing that airflow, that dust particles and everything else to start getting into that unit. So once you've turned it off, once you've turned off the source of heat and creating more heat, cover them up with RadioDustCovers.com. And we also have AdLocal. Get your email services, get your domain services, get your services from Ben Carr with AdLocal. They're out of Michigan, but check them out. Anyway, let me go into, see, there's the more appropriate way of saying it, anyway, instead of anywho. 425-270-5416, that is the comment line. 425-270-5416. Now, we got to stop listening to how the Constitution is being, I'll just say, dragged through the dredges when we hear people like Pelosi or any progressive utilize the Constitution. It really made me sick listening to the police testimony regarding this insurrection on January 6th when they talked about, I'm doing my job, I'm doing my constitutional job. No, you weren't. Absolutely not. You have no authority to keep people from being able to petition their government. That's the people's house. That's not the elitist. And it actually has become the elitist house because the elitists have paid for it. And they don't want you to have access. Over the past 80 years, they have been working ardently to get you out of their hair. They've basically fooled you into believing that you have a right to go out and protest, that you have a right to march up and down the street when you don't. And this is what happens when you exercise that alleged right and they don't like you. They'll tolerate the Bolshevik Revolution to destroying your property, your city. They don't care. But if all of a sudden, you know, you do the exact same thing to the government, well, and you're actually complaining because they're doing a bad job, I mean, if you look at the Bolshevik Revolution of 2020, or I should say the first skirmishes in our streets, they actually destroyed police and government buildings. Not one thing. Where are the inquiries? Where are the political prisoners? Oh, they don't do that. They let them go. Every single person that was arrested was immediately, after they mugshotted him and all that, they were immediately let go without bail. They're not even charging bail to these criminals nowadays. But, oh, you happen to walk inside the Capitol building, the People's Building, and did nothing, and you're a treasonous rioter or an insurrectionist or whatever you want to call it, a revolutionary. Are you kidding me? We have a constitutional right to petition government, and they have created all sorts of these laws and abridgments to keep you away from them. This is why the First Amendment petition is so critical in the plan in actually starting you to start using petitions in your county. So we have those petitions out there. Please contact us and say, how can we start working? Because we'll actually get you in contact with the We the People Foundation. We will get you in contact with other people. There may be petition experts in your state. So as we start looking at a Republican form of government and how it's supposed to, because we were talking about that in essence, we were trying to get back to the Electoral College. If you look at a representative in Congress now represents, almost a million people. Wow, that's a lot of people. So for an elector to actually represent you, do you feel like you're absolutely being represented? No. So we have a way of fixing this. We'll talk about this and who you can work with as soon as we come back from the break. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when we're talking about representation and the Electoral College, right, you get one elector for each senator, which basically is half your state, and then you get one elector for each congressional district. Now, in these really small population states like the Dakotas, Montana, I believe Montana only gets one elector. I think they only have one representative. That may be changing. I'm not sure. I think some of these single states might actually be popping into a two-representative state, which means that they would then have four. But the real question is, what is appropriate representation? Now, when we start talking about the Constitutional Convention, we start talking about how can one person truly represent a body of people. They came out clearly and said 30,000 people, that's a good number. Going beyond 50,000 is unacceptable. So they came to a compromise, and in the Constitution, they put in 40,000 people, that each representative would represent up to and no more than 40,000 people. Well, that changed. And what ended up happening was that they felt that the number was too high, that they felt that there would be less representation, that people would feel like, hey, I'm not going to get adequate representation in this government. So they changed it on practically the day of signing it to go back and reverted it to 30,000 people. And so here we have this paradigm now of people being represented up to 30,000 by your representative. Now, you could actually walk up, and in those days, I mean, it was realistic that they would know most of the people that they represented. Today, it's almost 750,000. 750,000 people. How is it that you can actually remember even 100,000, 200, a half a million? How can you adequately represent that many people? Specifically, when it comes to war, when it comes to the trade, the few things that you absolutely have enumerated powers over. So my point is that we need to actually start looking at how we can fix this. Now, as we move forward, the few things that we need to start educating people at the same time is this watering down of representation. When you actually have this many people that have no idea, I mean, there's so few people in the congressional district that really know what that person's doing and how they're doing it for you and protecting you. And the reason why that is because most of the stuff that they're doing is not for you and protecting you. That is a fact. What is it that they're doing? They're aggrandizing themselves and they're placating those who have money that pay for their elections. So the way we get this back is by demanding real representation. Bottom line, every representative in Congress has a minimum of 20 people that are in their employ. So do the math on that. Let's just say we have 400 because we have 435 and we add 20 to that. That means that there's 8,000 people that are employed. That's my math, at least. 8,000 people that are employed by these senators, representatives, in addition to the 435. So folks, help me out here. How is it that those people can even focus? Why don't we fire the 20 people that are allegedly staffers for these congressmen and actually hire more congressmen to do more work for you instead of all of the people? Because anybody that looks at the congressional districts and you look at where the money is, 9 times out of 10, that's where the favor goes. Well, if all of a sudden you broke it down by 50,000, and oh, by the way, that's exactly how Madison did it in his First Amendment to the Bill of Rights. If you go to Our First Right, it's an organization that was started off and spun off with, I think it's still associated to Tactical Civics, it's an organization that they're patriots, but they don't care about the solution. It's kind of like the Center for Self-Governance. They don't care about the solution. They just want to educate you and sell you their training, sell you their package, and send you on your way. Or actually help you get organized and bring in more people to, you know, bring in more money. They're a self-interest conservative organization. They're P-A-Y-triots, patriots with a pay, P-A-Y, instead of a P-A-T. Anyway, when we look at our first right, we could easily start making this a priority in passing this as part of the dialogue. So in other words, before we can even get to Republic Review, there's already 11 states. If I remember correctly, there's 11 states that have ratified this. And most of those states that ratified it were the early states. And when I say the early states, they're Eastern Seaboard states. I don't think there's very many states on the West Coast or in the central states, the later developed states, that ratified this. So how cool would it be if all of a sudden the following, 27 states, because that's how many we'd need, the following 27 states that would join for Republic Review that would not even be a part of the original 11 that ratified, because we're talking about dark red states. I'm here to tell you that that would actually send a shockwave through the swamp, because what would end up happening is the staffers would be fired. We would have a lot more representation, and representation would be at home. They cannot accommodate that kind of mass of people, giving them their own offices. This would shut down the House of Representatives as it stands today and virtualize it to where the state capitol and the county seats, if you live in a county that has got enough population where you would actually have your own representation or two, they would be operating out of your county seat. How cool would that be? How cool would it be to be able to go and petition your federal government right there down the street from you instead of having to get on a plane or drive an inordinate amount of time and energy and money just to be able to go talk to your representatives? Yeah, this would give us a little over 7,000 representatives. But it also displaces. This is why you got to watch that movie, The Swamp, that's on our page on Reclaiming the Republic. Important information. Just go to the important information, click on the link for The Swamp. It ought to play right there in your browser. Watch that. This gets rid of the lobbyists. So now we're talking again about a representative government. Who should be able to walk in? So we've already set the parameters of who should be able to contribute to the campaign. It can't be anybody outside the area of election. Whatever that county, whatever that district is, you cannot inject any money or influence. Well, okay, so that's on the front end. Why is it that we allow lobbyists who don't have any presence in the legislative district of this individual or congressional district of that individual, why is it lobbyists are able to walk right in and actually start dictating what these people need to do? Because they own them, because they're the ones that are buying them. I remember, I think it was George Carlin that stated that all politicians should put on their jackets all the people and companies that are contributing to them. Now, if you have the companies and then, you know, the affluent people, you know, whatever their major contributors are, if you actually had that on their jacket, sometimes their jacket would be such small font that you would just think it was maybe, you know, a polka dotted jacket, you know, white with polka dots or something, because there's that many people that have been buying into. Well, okay, maybe that's kind of good, but if none of those dots are within the legislative district, they shouldn't be there. They should be removed. Nobody should be able to have representation that, you know, it does not belong to them. Our representation is where you physically live and you're allocated a very set amount, period. They shouldn't have the ability to basically pull the strings of, you know, a half a dozen or all of Congress. I mean, that's what Trump was doing. Why didn't Trump shut down the swamp? He was the one that was actually exploiting the swamp and making it even dirtier and more corrupt. Where is his apology to America for doing that? This is why I question the motives of this man.
If this man truly cared about the swamp, about things being rigged, about things going bad for America, that we've been duped, then why isn't he saying what needs to be said? I am sorry, America, for what I did. I should never have done this. And moving forward, this is how we get out of this, because it's all about solutions. There is only one solution. Forcing federal government into full compliance to the Constitution, not just the spirit, but the letter of the law. But we also have to understand the letter of that law and understand republicanism and American republicanism, so that they are actually, our representative government is representing us and not representing those who have thick wallets, because we're going to take that money away from them to influence our elections. You should not allow anybody outside your election area to influence your elections. We will be right back after these two promos talking more about this representation and lobbyists. We'll be right back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
So if you start understanding the concept of representation, this actually can take on and actually start, I'll just say, start weaving this fabric, this paradigm throughout our government. When we start looking at our judicial process and the Supreme Court, do we really have representation at the court level, at the executive level? Well, with the Electoral College, yes, we do, because the Electoral College should actually allow the people's representation to bubble up. Now, here's the problem, and this is what I kind of document. That when you really start looking at the Electoral College, and then we'll get into the judges, but when you really start looking at the Electoral College and how each congressional district, each state has so many electors, and you, the people, are electing them, well, right now, the party actually narrows it down. They want you to vote for one of these two people. These two tickets is what they were presenting to you and making it so that, okay, this is what you get because this is what we found acceptable. I am here to tell you that the Republican and Democratic Party have constantly, you have the evidence that both sides have played these shenanigans for decades. They want to make sure that the person that is actually going to go into that Oval Office, they have a string to, so that their organ grinder, when it starts cranking the organ, their monkey dances to them. So the only way we can cut those organ strings is by eliminating the primaries, eliminating the national primaries. It's one thing for your states to have primaries, but for national elections, whether that be for, and actually the really only the national election there is, but it's really not national. This has been my biggest argument. The election of choosing the president is a state issue because the electors are state issues. There should be no money going from one state to another, promoting one person over another. If we actually force this, we would actually be able to watch a full, vigorous debate of people, and it would actually put every state back on the map because they would need to get a minimum of 270 votes. Well, there would be the process of possibly marginalizing the other states. But here's the danger in doing that. If they go to California, Texas, and just appeal to the big populated states, Florida and so forth, and not go through the middle states, the smaller states of representation, then what you'll find is that those candidates that do may gain momentum in their debates, may gain momentum as things transpire and actually upset the outcome for that presidential run. But the bottom line is the Electoral College is no longer forced. And now the Electoral College will actually vote for, instead of you having a ticket, because the Electoral College, you're not supposed to be voting for a president and vice president. You're supposed to be voting for just an elector. Now, you could vote for two or three electors. It depends on how the state set it up, because this goes back to that conversation I had with Keith. You know, most all states actually had the two electors for the Senate. Actually, that was at large. There were a couple of states where the state legislatures actually voted for the elector for the Electoral College. In other words, because the Senate represented the legislators had the ability to vote for who they wanted to send as electors, because that's where their electors were. So they actually allowed that. But most states, almost all states, threw the Senate electors out for the general public. So if you lived in a congressional district, you usually had three seats that you had to fill, two for the Senate and then one for your congressional district. So you had a local elector, and then you had two state electors. And that's how it was done in most of the states for quite a few years. You got to remember, it was only done every 4 years. And I believe when Keith was talking about it, it really started changing in the mid-1820s, 1830s. So we went about 50 years, about 10 times, where the Electoral College kind of functioned the way it was supposed to function, where you had representation in choosing the president. We're not a democracy. We do not allow direct elections for anything but your representatives. And because of that, this is why understanding representation and a Republican form of government is so critical. It helps us start clearing the clouds out of our heads and saying, you know what, this is how we need to do this. But if we look at this actually happening to where every state was in play, they couldn't just, you know, whimsically say, you know what, I'm not going to go through those central, you know, Midwest, red, dark red states. I'm not going to spend any time in Iowa, South Dakota, you know, maybe Minnesota, but North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho. I mean, some of these states, they just bypass altogether. I'm telling you that if we actually took the Electoral College back where the party was no longer controlling it, imagine these elections would really go the full distance and the people would be choosing their electors. Now, how were the electors, how did they present their campaigns? The electors were out there talking the issues of whichever who was talking. So bottom line, while you were voting for your elector, you knew who they were aligning with. George Washington's my man, period. That's all they needed to hear, and they voted for him. It was the same thing when Monroe ran. They only needed to hear that Monroe's my man, we're voting for him. Did you know that Madison, when he ran for president on the heels of Jefferson leaving office, in other words, the first time the seat opened up, Madison didn't even campaign. He didn't go out and talk to the people. He didn't do anything like that. He was busy working, and what he did was he communicated to the Electoral College, and he expressed to them what he was doing and why it was so critical, and he easily won without having to raise any money. Easily won. Imagine, folks, having a society where so many people are so reasonable and we agree so well that we recognize that a limited government, a government that's not out there trying to buy everybody and that's not for sale, and they're actually adhering to the limitations that they can't do all of these things, then wow, all of a sudden expectations are gone. All of a sudden everybody understands, you know, this is what we absolutely have to do, and they all agree upon it. Now, it would take a long time. It took, you know, Moses 40 years to change the culture of Israel. However, I truly believe that if we started injecting, and this is what would happen, I believe that we would start seeing miracles regarding our elections of the choosing of the president. And what I mean by that is we will all of a sudden start getting people that were not directly affiliated to the Council of Foreign Relations, to the elitist societies, and to the elitist groups, and to the parties. As a matter of fact, when and if, because I mentioned this in my previous episode, how great would it be to actually see two parties come together and actually work through and canonize or definitize the Constitution? You know, last summer I said that the Constitution Party needs to be the champion, needs to lead on definitizing. I actually retract that. I say that now the Independent American Party and the Constitution Party need to definitize what that Constitution is. Be happy to help them. As a matter of fact, I'm sure there's lots of self-proclaimed constitutional experts out there that would love to get involved and help them. But I believe this needs to be an open, honest dialogue with everybody. Academia, the American people, everybody. Because if we do that, then that means everybody's paying attention. That means everybody will understand what this means, why it means this way, why you can't do this, and why you have to do that. And all of a sudden, America becomes educated. How bad would that be if all of a sudden people realize the beauty in having such a limited and defined government? How bad would that be? I mean, just imagine that. Or even yet, how about the bursting when two stars collide, right? Or two forces, two political forces, even though they may not be that immense, two political forces colliding and coming together and becoming one without destroying the energy of either, and actually from the energies of both create a symbiosis of more energy and even a greater influence. Isn't that interesting? What do you think? Do you believe that two parties coming together and agreeing on the Constitution, this is a body of people, a body of people of scruples, of principles, of ideas and designs that are based on our founding. What would you think if that happened? Now, if it was done as a result of the canonizing or the definitizing of the Constitution, in other words, when these two parties finally come together and say, this is what we become, and I'm just throwing it out there, the American Constitution Party. Here's the American Constitution Party, and this is what we've defined every line, not we've defined, we have discovered and provided to you all the definitions that the framers legally gave during the ratification debates of this Constitution. This is what all of this stuff means. I want you to think about that as these two parties are coming together. What does that mean? We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so think about this. What would the perception be if all of a sudden people realize the two parties that went down a divisive path of saying, we're breaking away because this is what's important, all of a sudden joined together to say, we're joining because this is what's important? That's what we have to see. That's what we need to start doing. And what kind of an impact is it when you have political parties, when you have conservative organizations like the We the People Foundation, the Constitutional Alliance, the National Liberty Alliance, and all of these other conservative organizations that are all agreeing that we need to unite? And it's not about necessarily Republic Review, but it's Republic Review is the process of holding government and the government employees, public servants, accountable. It's that beautiful, folks. Getting them to do what they said they would do. Wow. So I believe that would be tantamount to that shot heard around the world. I believe it would be a burst that would give a guiding light to those who are just, you know, they're so disenfranchised. Right now we have how many of Americans are out there independent because they've just completely felt disenfranchised and felt that the parties have been lying, that they just can't trust the parties anymore. They've become independent for a reason. Wow. Now you have an institution, an organization that's saying, we don't have an agenda. We do not care about supporting any agendas whatsoever. The only thing we care about is full compliance of the Constitution. You're not happy. You want the government to be able to do something more. Then the process is amending it. Work through the process. That's what has to happen. And I'm going to tell you, when you start taking away some of these things, people are going to go, well, maybe we need them to do that. I actually will inject the response. Maybe we need the states to do this instead. Maybe we need the states give the states the ability to coordinate, to strategize, to define exactly what should be done. Because here's the thing. Every time a federal bureaucracy, let's just look at the strategy of communications, whatever strategy you make up the department, when all of a sudden you have a political organization such as the globalists on both sides of the Uniparty, when you actually start injecting this regulatory agency, this bureaucracy, well, who fills it? Is it filled by representation from each state? No. It's filled by what we would call sycophants, people who are a part of the Borg, who support the concept of federal controls, government controls. Very rarely does the Republican side, like maybe Trump, got some good guys in there. But they don't stay. They don't stick around because the next presidency will replace them. Why? Because they know this was done by Bush. Why do you think Clinton didn't make as many wholesale changes to what Bush did, you know, as far as his placements in some of these bureaucracies? There were some wholesale changes, judge-wise and so forth, but and Bush Senior, Bush Junior did the same thing, but they didn't change the leadership and all of these lower. They didn't go through and gut out like I told Trump. Like I mentioned, that Trump needed to get rid of everybody as low as he could go. They're all gone because they're all loyalists to the deep state. It's that bad, folks. It really is that bad. And the fact of the matter is, because these people, the federal government isn't worried about state representation in these agencies. The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, they don't care about what's best for the states. That's how bad it is. This is why the strategies for energy has had nothing to do with what's best for the states and how they can play along and lead the world down this direction of what they believe is best. Folks, if you start understanding a representative government, it starts rippling and rippling and rippling. Every state should have representation in every agency. Every state and all people need to understand what the heck was going on. But the fact is that those agencies were all created unconstitutionally. So moving forward, if you choose to allow an agency to be created, such as the federal aviation, then it would behoove you to not amend the Constitution, allow the states to do this, because the states would maintain representation at all levels of that commission, of that county, of that, if you want to call it a Congress, commission, charter, organization, whatever that aviation bureaucracy would be. It would be representing the states, and it would be representing the states' interests. This is why we've had things rammed down our throats. And this is why every time that they do this, everybody goes, how did this happen? How in the heck did they get ability to do this? You know what? We don't have to ask those questions anymore. We already know. They are violating the Constitution. It's that simple. And we don't have to allow them to violate the Constitution. These vile creatures that they are, we need to get them to actually do their job in representing the states at in every facet. As a representative government, that should be the expectation. Why is it that every bureaucracy at the federal level has more representation of what the globalists want and what the UN and these external non-Republican form of government entities? I mean, this hurts my head that nobody sees this, that nobody recognizes how unrepresented we are and how we have actually become the federal government has become the portal of the manipulation of America. And I started this all off, folks, with Christmas. Christmas was the beginning of that portal. Christmas was the beginning of how America would be manipulated and twisted and thrown to and fro. Today, we are the manipulation and the perversion of America is on steroids. I can't say it any better. The perversion of America is on steroids. It is out of control. So what we have to do is we have to start taking back the counties. This is where you, and this is where we're going to need to get into this. We're going to have to go through and talk about what it takes, because we just went through this. We just went through this. And oh, by the way, I need to start reminding everybody that at the beginning of every show, if you believe that this show was important, you need to write down the day of this show. If you want to help, you can actually sit down and write a closed or an abstract of the things that I talked about and provide it to me, and I'll just cut and paste that and put that in with the podcast. But right now, I've got so many other things I'm doing, I just don't have the time to do that. And so that's why when you go to my podcast, it just says the dates. Boom, boom, boom. So you need to keep track. You need to keep track of what's important. Wow, that's really important. My friends need to hear this particular dialogue. They need to hear this. So we're going to go through this again. You may want to write these dates down. I provide the dates. Like the last time I went through the ratification debates was March 29th to May 28th. It was about 2 months. This coming year, we may actually take longer. We may take longer to go through more of the ratification debates. More is better, because the more you hear, the harder it is to refute the empirical data that the Constitution was well-defined, it was well-confined by these definitions, and that these are the legally binding definitions for all of us. That's exactly what the Constitution means, and it takes away the jurist's ability to interpret. So as we kind of meander on and on and on, one of the things that I still wanted to kind of cover before I really get into the county, because I kind of threw this out there, that we would, you know, I talked about the Miller Urey, and I usually mispronounce it with the Urey, but it's Miller Urey. I think it's U-R-E-Y, Urey. Just look it up, Miller Urey experiment, and you'll probably find what this really was. And actually, I think you'll actually find, is it Wikipedia? Yeah, some of them actually have those out there, so you can get to some of those details. But this experiment was kind of fascinating, that what they did was they created this protein goo. And this is how the first line of Wikipedia explains this. The Miller-Urey experiment, or Miller experiment, was a chemical experiment that simulated the conditions thought at the time in 1952 to be present on the Earth, in the early Earth, we're talking millions of years ago, and tested the chemical origins of life under those conditions. What they did was they basically took clay and they broke it down into a water solution to what they, well, basically, like I call it, a protein goo. And what they did was they threw lightning at this, and they believed that they got these cells to start, you know, bonding and so forth. But the problem was that the cells never would come to life because they didn't have the DNA. That was the huge missing point. And that the Miller-Urey experiment became literally, well, I'll get into it when we come right back in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.